Wrestler Court, Kenan and Turtle, Wrestler Court, Kenan and Turtle, Wrestler Court, Kenan and Turtle, yeah. Kenan and Turtle in the Wrestler Court, one's a fan, the other used to ref the sport. One will speak and then the other will retort. Things could get heated, someone could get hurt at Wrestler Court, Kenan and Turtle, Wrestler Court, Kenan and Turtle, Wrestler Court, Kenan and Turtle, yeah. Judge, lawyer, bailiff, jury, strong opinions, rage and fury. Okay, it's time to argue wrestling. Wrestler Court, court is in session.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Wrestler Court podcast with Kenan and Turtle. I'm Kenan.
And I'm Turtle.
You can find us on CBSPhilly.com as well as iTunes and the new radio.com app. Hey, do us a favor. If you're over there on iTunes, please subscribe, rate and review while you're there. Five-star reviews are always the best. We have a couple right now, don't we?
One of them is from me.
The other's from me, too.
But do like we did and rate and review us 5 stars.
5 stars. 5 stars. Kind of like Ty Dillinger. 10. 10. But
oh, God.
5. 5.
You're going to ruin our 5-star reviews. Don't bring up Ty Dillinger.
Of course, always powered by Sports Radio 94 WIP. Lots of good feedback to our Robbie E episode last week with all types of cool stories, including him being a finalist on The Amazing Race.
Yeah, that was one of my most favorite parts of the interview. I loved all the stories and hearing about his history and who he grew up watching and all those things like that. But I like seeing the outside the ring Robbie E, too. It was pretty cool.
What do you mean that was one of your favorite parts? Your favorite part was
Hashtag Turtles the host, Kevin's the co-host.
Yeah, and I mean, that's...
It's what should be.
I don't know what that means.
Robbie E said it. And maybe our guest today will say it too.
Now, Ted DiBiase Jr. sides with me on everything, as you're going to see.
We'll see.
We're longtime friends. He's a good man. We do have Ted DiBiase Jr. coming up here in just a little bit. We're talking all things WWE. We're talking about our time in FCW. But most importantly, we're talking about the movie The Price of Fame, which he is a producer on, coming up for one night only nationwide in select theaters based off of his father, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, Tuesday, November 7th.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. I can't wait.
I can't wait either. We're certainly going to go check it out. I actually checked out the theaters in the area that are playing it. There's one close to me and there's one close to you.
Done.
Yeah, so we're definitely going to do that. But let's take a trip back in time, Turtle. Let's go back just a few days ago to Minneapolis, Minnesota. The Target Center and TLC. Lots of issues for the WWE going into this pay-per-view.
Unfortunately, a lot of those issues were due to health, and we do wish the best for all those superstars who do have whatever sickness is going around, and we don't know exactly what it is, but we do wish the best for their health.
I heard a couple different things. I heard meningitis. I heard mumps, which... neither of them sound like a good day at the office.
No, it's not fun. And like I said, we just wish the best for those superstars.
So the WWE certainly did some scrambling here, trying to fill these spots and make this an enticing pay-per-view to watch, including bringing in AJ Styles off of the South America tour to come in and work the Demon Finn Balor. We're going to get to that. But shotgunning, hot-shotting the return, the in-ring return, rather, of WWE Hall of Famer Kurt Angle.
I was stunned. I really was, because I didn't think they were going to go that direction to begin with. I didn't think he was ever going to wrestle again, because they were very anti-Daniel Bryan wrestling. So I figured they'd be very anti-Kurt Angle wrestling, since they both have kind of an injury history there. But they did it. And it wasn't great, but it wasn't awful either. I was impressed with his current in-ring skill and conditioning.
Yeah, you could tell he hadn't been in the ring in a while. Self-admittedly, his in-ring cardio wasn't where it needed to be. He said that on Raw Talk after the pay-per-view, which is to be expected from anybody who hasn't been in the ring in some amount of time. Daniel Bryan did tweet, hashtag, so you're saying there's a chance.
I don't think the WWE wants to lose Daniel Bryan, and I believe, just by reading his tweets and seeing interviews with him out there, that he wants to wrestle again.
He does want to wrestle again. And
I don't think they want to lose him, so I think they're going to do their best to clear him when the time comes.
I believe, and I don't hold me to this, but I believe the contract of Daniel Bryan is up next September, this coming September.
I believe that's what I read, too.
And he wants to wrestle, but if not, guess what? Daniel Bryan's a goner. He can easily go to New Japan. He can easily go back to Ring of Honor. He can easily go to Impact. Daniel Bryan's in. We have not seen the last of Daniel Bryan in the ring, or we may not have seen the last of Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, in the ring. It depends on when and where we see him in the ring. We're going to see him again.
My guess would be he will be in a WWE ring. They don't want to lose that money. That's the most important thing to them. That's the most important thing.
That would be my guess. That would be my guess too. And I have a feeling they're gonna cave to him, because you saw the way they caved back around WrestleMania time, WrestleMania 30, when they kind of switched courses when the fans wanted it no other way than Daniel Bryan in the main event of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
They caved then. They're going to cave now. Daniel Bryan will be in a WWE ring again. But speaking of being in a WWE ring, the debut of Asuka at TLC this past Sunday on the WWE Network in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in my opinion, was not all it was cracked up to be.
You had her fighting a fairly irrelevant woman superstar. Emma is, yeah, great. She's actually a really good talker, I think. And
she's not a bad talker.
I kind of enjoy the accent, especially when she gets really angry. But as far as in-ring talent, she's fairly irrelevant. And I know that's why they did it, to get Asuka over. But they did a poor job of doing it.
Well, Emma has had a couple, still may have a couple injury issues. She's had a couple resets, so they really haven't put any type of machine behind her or any type of reason to care about her in those WWE storylines on that WWE television show.
You mean you don't care about Emelina?
No, I don't even know what an Emelina is.
Those really annoying vignettes that they aired for months and months and
months. And then gave her one shot and then said Emma's returning? Yeah, yep. It's absolutely terrible. But here's the deal. When you have an irrelevant character like that, it's basically a feeder to the debuting superstar.
Absolutely.
Asuka should have, in my opinion, Asuka should have steamrolled Emma. That way, you build a somewhat established star. You beat a somebody. You don't beat a nobody, but you beat a somebody. A little bit of a somebody. But you establish dominance. You establish that the whole women's roster on Raw and SmackDown's on notice.
Yeah.
What you don't do is you don't give her a 50-50 match and show that she can't beat somebody. You don't have Emma kick out of all of her stuff. I get that she went over. The match was good, but that wasn't the business at hand.
Well, unfortunately, WWE is not the best at dealing with the business at hand.
In a lot of different variations, in a lot of different forms.
Two, one.
But Asuka got a wake-up call real quick, Turtle, that she's no longer in the land of Triple H and NXT. This is now Vince's show. And regardless of what people say, they are two completely, completely different worlds. The mistake the WWE has got to stop making is thinking that everybody watches NXT. Because they don't. We could sit here and beat a dead horse all day, but let's move on. Bottom line, Asuka debut, not a fan. Turtle?
I'm a fan of hers. I wasn't a fan of her debut.
Perfect. Next matchup on the card in TLC was Cedric Alexander and Rich Swann. They went on to defeat Jack Gallagher and the Brian Kendrick. And again, we covered this last week. I like Swanee. I like Cedric. I like Brian. I don't know Jack. This doesn't do anything for me.
I swear, and this is the legit truth, I walked my dog during that match. I couldn't care less about this match at all. I didn't see one second of it.
And again, this just goes back to the way they've branded and the way that they've presented the 205 Live show.
Yeah, I mean, it's not entertaining.
It's not anything that I'm going to go out of my way to see. Well, we called this, didn't we?
Oh, yes, we did.
We certainly, again, we're going to keep referencing last week's show because, as it was, you know, obviously it was the preview show, but we said Alexa was going to beat Mickey.
Shocking.
And she did.
I mean,
but did it
who really thought that her 7-time dream was going to come true?
Again, great story. Again, poor execution. They didn't do a great job of telling that story. It's a great idea on paper.
Sure.
It's
a great idea on paper, great idea in theory. Then let her win and tell the story better.
But you have to execute the build up in order for
win. They never do.
Correct. In order for the win to mean something. I don't know what it sounded like to you, but to me, and I know she was on Raw Monday night. I didn't see what she did, but did it not sound like she gave the interview after the match like she was leaving the company?
That's exactly what it sounded like to me, and I assumed she was. I haven't heard anything of the either side yet, but
no.
I assumed she was.
No, we certainly haven't, and, you know, hey, Mickey, if you're listening, if you leave the company, podcast. But
that was super creepy. But I would definitely love to have her on the podcast.
Yeah, she'll be on. That's it. That's assumed she leaves the company. But based off that promo, that's what I was led to believe.
Yes. And also, remember, very similar. John Cena did the same thing in the other pay-per-view that SmackDown was on. That was kind of the goodbye,
right,
the ring in the
ring. Right, where he kind of saluted the crowd.
Kind of,
and, yeah.
And maybe that is his kind of quote-unquote goodbye, but he'll be back whenever they shine the bat light, he said.
Well, I mean,
but
he wasn't at Raw Monday. He was on Dancing with the Stars. So what's that tell you?
He's got other interests and a smoking hot fiance.
Correct. Let's move on here. Enzo Amore versus Kalisto. Here's another 205 Live thing that I...
Back to walking the dog again. Yeah. I'm dead serious, too.
You walked your dog twice?
I did. Well, she's got to go to the bathroom.
Oh, no better time to do it during an Enzo
a cruiserweight match. I had zero interest, and I knew he was going to win.
Again, I've seen Enzo stick.
Shtick.
Stick, whatever. I meant to say shtick. He's a channel changer for me.
Absolutely.
You know, I said this last week. I'll say it this week. I'll say it next week and the week after that. Talk about somebody who needs a reboot, but I don't know how you reboot a character like that.
Oh, there is no reboot for him. He's not, because he's not a good wrestler, number one. So what are you going to come back with him in like a suit and tie?
I don't know what you do with him.
He's so far to the one side. That's his thing. And he can't get over on talent alone.
He's got such a good microphone that I'd give him a shot on commentary, to be perfectly honest.
But nobody wants to work with him.
I mean, we know he's injury prone. You've seen one Enzo match, you've seen them all, you've heard one Enzo promo, you've heard them all. And I feel like we're being hard on a lot of these guys. But the fact is that the current storylines and the product is just blah at this point in time.
See, here's the problem. Their two top championships on Raw are, at the moment, essentially irrelevant. Their Universal title is barely ever on the program. And now he's going to work a thing in a month with another guy who I find unbelievably boring and channel changer, and Jinder Mahal.
I disagree with you there. But
no, seriously.
But
so,
that's what happens when you give a part-timer
so you
the
gave
big
a part-timer
money
the
and a world title.
And the secondary championship was involved in some rando storyline with the Shield that wasn't the Shield because of the illnesses, and it wasn't defended there. So now your top championship that was defended was either the Women's Championship or the Cruiserweight title. I have much more interest in the Women's title, but that match was a snoozer
and
for
me. And now they're going to bring the two champions together at Survivor Series. Woo. And job out one of their champions to a part-timer.
Yes. Absolutely. There's
insanity.
There's less than zero chance that Jinder Mahal wins.
I say Jinder Mahal actually loses in almost record time, to be honest with you.
Maybe bring back Goldberg and let them spear them both and like make it entertaining or something.
It's just unbelievable. I understand people are sick, okay?
Sure.
And I understand people are hurt. But there's different ways to go about this. You don't have to sacrifice Jinder to Brock. It's just that's not a thing.
Well, that's what Survivor Series is champion on champion, this on that. I mean, all the champions are going to get jobbed out here. Like, do you really believe Rollins and Ambrose are going to lose to the Usos?
No, not at all. No, right. we're
so the only chance
we're
going
to ride the Shield thing to at least the Royal Rumble.
So the only chance of a title not changing hands is the Women's title, which okay, then maybe what's it called? Natty loses to Alexa, whoop de whoop, or the USA title over the Intercontinental title,
and that should happen.
Yeah, so we know the matches already.
Yeah.
Universal title is going to win. Intercontinental title is going to lose. Tag team champions are all going to win. Women's title on Raw is probably going to win. Why am I watching Survivor Series? For what? I know what's going to happen. I guarantee these things happen.
You know, I complained a lot last week.
And you're going to complain some more right now.
Well, you're complaining a lot this week.
I am.
I'm complaining a fair bit, too, but I'm going to keep complaining right now.
Go for it.
Who wants to see Elias three times across
Nobody.
A pay-per-view?
I liked his gimmick when he was the Wanderer or whatever the hell it was.
Loved it.
And that was cool. Just to walk behind the guys and just randomly pop. That was funny as hell.
And I didn't even mind the whole singing thing in the beginning.
But who wants to see Jason Jordan then either?
But now it's tiresome. Jason Jordan on his own.
Is boring.
Correct. They tried this whole Kurt Angle's his dad thing. And again, if you want to go that way, that's fine.
By the way, wouldn't Chad Gable have been the guy since they're both Olympians?
Well, you would think, but if you want to go that way, that's fine. But you have to follow through with it.
And they stopped, essentially.
They just completely...
Because it didn't get over.
They let it fall by the wayside.
So now they have a random Jason Jordan guy working with Matt Hardy, working against Elias. Like, I don't care about any of these guys right now, unfortunately.
They have to do a better job of putting stock into these guys. They have to do a better job of telling these stories. If they listen, everybody wants a return on their investment, right?
Sure.
They're probably paying Jason Jordan. If I had to venture to guess, and the structure, the pay scale structure could have changed, but I would venture to guess his downside's probably $125,000. He's going to make it.
Seems like a lot, but you would know better than I.
He's going to make at least $210,000 in a calendar year. I'm sorry, but they're not seeing that. They're not seeing that return on the investment. They're really not, and they have no one to blame but themselves.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't care.
Clearly they don't. They're the multi-billion-dollar machine that just keeps on going.
I'm
going
to tell you why they don't care. Can I tell you why they don't care?
No.
I'm going to tell you anyway why they don't care. People get hurt. People get sick. We have to fill some spots on a pay-per-view, and yes, I know that we have to scramble. Can somebody, anybody, give me a logical reason as to why you give away a potential WrestleMania match in the Demon Finn Balor versus AJ Styles with zero story
because they're
and
scrambling.
Zero build-up?
Well,
you
and I agree
wasted it.
And the only story that they could have had, unless they moved
blew
one
the whole thing.
I agree with you, but the only story they could have had, unless they moved one or the other to the alternate brands to put them on a build-up, would be the trash talking element. Would be the, oh, I'm the best worker here, and Finn Balor come out.
They don't
I'm the demon,
about that.
I'm the best
they don't,
worker.
They don't,
but there's no story to that.
Right.
That's the only story that there is.
But they don't ever reference that, so that's not even a thing.
Right, so now there's no story for whatever match you do. Unless you just build up, oh, coming soon, coming soon, coming soon. There's no story to that. I agree with you.
It's a complete waste.
But it was a good match.
Even that's debatable.
No, it was a very solid match.
Sure, the match was solid, but what were they talking about the next day? They weren't talking about AJ Balor. They were talking about Kurt Angle.
Well, they were also talking about the Too Sweet thing and all that nonsense.
Sure. I mean, that's fine. In ode to their boys, in ode to the Bullet Club. What's up, boys? You know, that type
Kurt
of thing.
Kurt Angle was the draw of this pay-per-view.
In spite of the WWE, he originally wasn't. You know,
I agree.
You know, it's a last second thing. So let's get into it. Tables, ladders, and chairs, 5-on-3. I guess you could call them the Shield. Kurt Angle, Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins. Versus the Miz, Sheamus, Cesaro.
I hated the entrance for them.
Why?
Why? Kurt Angle's draw is the you suck, you suck, you suck chant.
Great.
And it was not done for his big return match.
Didn't need to be.
I disagree. I thought it was
vital.
It didn't
need to be.
That's why they played it again when he miraculously got better.
No, you're wrong. Him coming out dressed as the Shield, showing they're a unit, was a moment in and of itself.
Sure.
You didn't want to waste the big Kurt Angle entrance for something like that because he's going to have a singles match. So now you can get the feeling like he's returning twice when he eventually comes out in the red, white, and blue.
I guess.
And he gets the pyro if they want to spend the money on it. And
that's comical, by the way. I don't need the pyro. I just find it hilarious that they just went cold turkey on that.
Well, a couple people were like, you know, that's insane. That's so stupid. Kane didn't get his pyro. Who cares?
I agree. I don't care. I don't need it. But there's a few guys that I believe should have it. Kurt Angle is one. Kane is one. Undertaker doesn't really have pyro, but he's got, like, lightning and all that stuff. Those guys, I think, should have it. I don't need pyro for Sasha Banks or anything like that.
No, and I don't think anybody else needs pyro.
Like, Brock Lesnar should have it, I think.
Yeah, Brock
should get
it.
That was part of his gimmick, because he's walked in, he does the thrusting thing, and that's like, that's cool.
But moral of my story, point being, is that you get to feel like Kurt's returning a second time, and he gets the big grand entrance, and he gets the grand. You didn't need it at TLC, and anybody who thought you did need it,
right?
I'm sorry, you're wrong. Totally wrong.
I mean, that's fine.
Wrestling fans on Twitter and wrestling fans all over the place, you're just wrong. The photo op of him in the crowd with Ambrose and Rollins in the tactical outfit was the moment. It was a moment in and of itself. You're always going to remember when Kurt Angle returned to TLC.
I disagree, but I get it.
As a member of the Shield.
I understand.
You know what else you're going to remember, Turtle?
Ted DiBiase Jr.?
You're going to remember this interview with Ted DiBiase Jr. Did you know the price of fame, one night only, November 7th?
I did. I can't wait.
Tuesday night, November 7th. As a matter of fact, you can go to themoviescreener.com to get tickets, or if you go to thepriceoffame.com and click on tickets, you can get your tickets right there. So look at that. We don't have to stand in line at the box office.
Beautiful.
Beautiful, that's it?
I'm ready.
Beautiful?
I'm excited. I can't wait.
You ready for Ted?
Let's get him on.
You ready for a little Ted Jr.?
Let's go.
All right. Well, then coming up next, former WWE superstar and producer of the Price of Fame movie, Ted DiBiase Jr., coming right back.
Yo, what's up? This is Robbie E., and you are listening to Wrestlers Court Podcast with your host, Turtle, and your co-host, Kevin Keenan, yo.
All right, Turtle. Slam down the gavel. Court is now in session. Do you know that I'm still the Honorable Keenan?
You are never honorable, but you're Kevin Keenan.
You're still my bailiff.
Yeah.
You're still my bailiff. Remember, I'm the host. You're the co-host.
That's not what Robbie E. said, but we'll go by that later.
We'll go with the hashtag. Hey, joining us right now, we have somebody on the line who really, really meant a lot to me during my time in WWE and my time in developmental and FCW. And we're gonna get into all of that here in just a little bit. But he's the former two-time WWE Tag Team Champion and producer of the new movie Price of Fame, based on his father, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. For all details, head over to thepriceoffame.com. His name is Ted DiBiase Jr., and he's on the line with us right now. How you doing, Teddy?
Man, I'm better now talking to you, buddy.
You know, it's been a long time since we caught up.
It really has, Kevin. It's good to hear your voice, man. I certainly appreciate you guys having me on today, Turtle, Eric, whatever, whichever it is.
Well, we appreciate you joining us, and I'm sorry that you had to deal with Kevin for all those years.
We had some good times, man.
Ted, you know,
he
apologizes to everybody we have on. I don't understand what I don't understand this whole thing.
Oh, man. Well, Turtle, I understand your sentiment, you know, and Kevin can certainly be a bit much, but he is one of my most treasured friends from being a blast from the past. You know, FCW days weren't easy, were they?
They, Keenan? Were not easy, but we had a lot of fun.
We started in the back corner of that. It was like a warehouse. Remember all those green beans and canned goods that were stacked to the ceiling and no air conditioning, and we had to like change the ring curtains, what, like six times a day?
There was no air conditioning. It was a bare warehouse. There was a legitimate business office next to where we were training as we were transforming this building. We would go into the legitimate business office, this place of business, to warm up our lunch. So can you imagine guys in wrestling tights and sweaty knee pads and boots and stuff coming in while these guys are trying, you know, they're moving legitimate money, real business stuff in suits and that kind of thing, and we're running in and out of here using their microwaves and taking their bottles of water and stuff. It was unbelievable. But we're going to get into some FCW and WWE in just a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little Price of Fame here, Ted. So this is a story told through the eyes through you, the son of one of the most successful wrestling stars in his industry. What was it like for you, Ted, to really dig deep here and tell this story of your father?
Man, you know, it was tough. I'm not going to lie. You know, and I think that's what really makes this story a success. And so impactful, and that's what we really want, man. I really wanted to. I'll be honest with you. I'll start from the beginning. My dad called me out to Wilcox, Arizona, to film some stuff for this documentary. I think this was like the third time somebody was trying to do a documentary on my dad. You know, and my dad's amazing, and he just told me that he would love to come on the show. So definitely, you guys are going to get him.
Oh, fantastic!
You can tell him all the good things I said about him, but he's super naive, you know, and I feel like sometimes I got to protect him. But I went out there to, you know, beat up some mark that wanted to just like hang out with the Million Dollar Man and put a video camera in his face. And, to be quite honest with you, and see where my dad grew up. I was like, well, okay, I'll beat somebody up and bond with my dad where he grew up, this town he's always told me about and the place I've never seen. And so that was my intentions. And what I found out was Pete Ferrero, who's become a very good friend, co-producer on the film, incredibly talented director, was actually the real deal. And people are going to see that. I'm excited for him, and people learn about his just talent. And so get out there, and we started walking through the streets, and I saw where my dad came from. I saw the tiny, tiny house that he grew up in, and this Wilcox, Arizona at that time, one traffic light. I saw where he stood every night, you know, cried his eyes out, talking to his dad, telling him about his dreams, telling him about his mess ups. And that we shared a moment there at his grave. And dude, it changed me, you know, and my hero, I saw him in my footsteps. The way that I looked at my dad growing up was the same way that he thought of his father. You know, the same way I think of my dad still to this day is the same way my dad thinks about Iron Mike DiBiase. You know, and for those of you listening don't know, I'm also a third generation wrestler and superstar. My grandmother was even a wrestler. But it was, man, it was special. And so that really, it hooked me. And I was like, wow, I've got to take this journey, you know. And then along the way, it was really hard having some conversations with my dad that I knew his story. You know, my dad's been an ordained minister since he left WWF for 16 years now, traveling the world and sharing his testimony, sharing the gospel. And faith is incredibly important to us, the most important. But so, you know, that's definitely in the story. It's not all of the story. We did a really good job and made sure that the wrestling, the 100 million wrestling fans out there across the WWE universe around the world that adore my father, you know, and got to see me for 15 minutes. Didn't have the 23-year tenure, you know, reign that my dad did, but they get to go on a journey through his wrestling career. And man, there's something for everybody, you know. But having some of those, to answer your question, Tim, it was very tough. It was tough talking to my mom for the first time and capturing that on camera, and just seeing the hurt, you know, that came from some decisions my hero made and the way that he treated the one woman that before my wife I loved the most, my mother. Man, it was hard, but it was so good. And honestly can say that we're tighter than we've ever been, and we're incredibly excited about the just the hope that it can give to families that have suffered, you know, some of the same stuff that we've gone through. So talks about the journey from poverty to riches and fame, the fall from grace that my dad took with my mom, him giving up his dream for his family, which is really what I did in 2013 when I left WWE. And so there's a little bit of everything in there, man. And I'm just excited for the world to get to know the real DiBiases here, all of our laundry, and be inspired, you know, and be inspired and hopefully give some rays of hope to those that need it, some excitement and laughter to those who have enjoyed watching the Million Dollar Man, who is a living legend, man. And I'm just humbled and couldn't be more tickled to death that he's my dad, you know, so.
Well, there's no doubt that he's a living legend, a WWE Hall of Famer. Now we're talking about the story and the journey of your father, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, and many of the guys that your dad had worked with over the years have actually made appearances in this film. One of them being the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, a fellow WWE Hall of Famer. Someone like Shawn, who has had a self-admitted reckless past himself, how did he help tell the story of the Million Dollar Man?
Well, you know, my dad was one of the guys that connected with Shawn, that Shawn reached out to when he was going through some of his darkest times, and was really there. It's really cool because Shawn shares in the story that, you know, about how my dad was one of the guys when, you know, he was a greenhorn that really took him in and showed him the ropes. And you know, Kenan, those days, I mean, the old school, I mean, it was like
much different than what we were used to.
It was much different. And it's a dog eat dog world. It's shark infested waters up there. Everybody knows it, you know. But back then it was, you know, kill or be killed.
Yeah.
So my dad, you know, he just took a liking to Shawn, let him ride with him. And my dad was in a a top guy position at the time and some of the territories, and took him under his wing, you know, because somebody had done that for my dad, and that he's always been that kind of guy. So Sean tells of that, and then also the spiritual journey. When Sean got saved, you know, he knew that my dad had gone through a similar experience, the same experience, and was now sharing his testimony. So once again, he reaches out to my dad for advice and mentorship there, and it's just really cool how God brought those two men down a similar path. You know, each had their own demons, each had a fall, but each experienced redemption, and now each are doing things in life that are far more significant, or not more. They are more. They've added the significance to their life. You know, I love this quote by John Maxwell. It says, "You know, once you've tasted significance, success will never taste the same." And so, my dad and Sean had tasted success. You know, but they were missing that significant piece, and that's what Jesus brought to their lives and faith and just family. Like, you know, there is real life outside of wrestling. You know,
it's hard to believe, isn't it?
Inside, isn't it, Keenan?
look at us all growing up 10 years later, Ted.
I'm telling you, man, it's crazy. I got a little girl on the way.
You were telling me about that. How far out are we?
We're halfway there, man.
Beautiful.
Yeah, February.
Well, congratulations. So, that's your second, right?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, little boy.
We'll get into it in just a little bit, but there was I recently reconnected with some old FCW guys, old OVW guys, and a Facebook thread of mine just turned into telling old stories. We'll get into it towards the end, but
cool.
So there was a piece that I saw in the trailer that kind of stuck out to me where I think Sean was talking to you, where he says, we don't even identify with the people we used to be. What did that mean to you? When Sean says, we know your father and I, we know we used to be somebody else.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're no longer that person. You know,
right.
Was there a sense of growing up in a sense?
Oh, 100%, man. And what's crazy is, and I don't even think I've told Sean this, so this is probably revealing, and you're getting some exclusive, information. I went back to the hotel that night, I was doing some reflecting and self-reflection, you know. And what I realized is, a lot of people, I mean, it took like 3 years to put this film together, you know, and so it was a journey for me. When I left WWE in August 2013, you know, they offered me another contract, which I was grateful for. I just couldn't, man. I was just going through some inner turmoil, and Sean kind of helped me see that day. And ever since then, I've really just been intentional about who am I, you know, focusing on what do I identify myself with, you know. And we use this a lot talking to the kids and some of the things that we can talk about later in Heart of David Ministry here locally in Mississippi, working with inner city kids is, you know, as wrestlers in the WWE, WWF, when you get to that level, man, you become that person. You become that character, and it is intoxicating. I mean, you're making more money than you ever dreamed or imagined. You know, I mean, we did it, Keenan. You fly all over the world. You're treated like a king everywhere you go.
Everywhere.
So you identify. That becomes who you are. But I realized that, man, at the end of my life, I don't want my son, or I don't want to be remembered as Ted DiBiase Jr., the wrestler, or the movie star, you know, one time. I can't really call myself a star, but it happened.
Well, it's more than Keenan's had, so it's fine.
Thank you, Turtle. And so, you know, who am I? You know, the truth is I'm a father. I'm a husband. I'm a child of God. My integrity means more to me than anything else in the world. You know, I've been given much, so I'm required much. You know, it's not who you become, or it's not what you do does not define who you are. It's who you become along the way. You know, so and that's what Sean was telling me that day, and I realized, you know, we're not WWE superstars. We're more than that. You know. While you're there, that's all you see yourself as. And I think a lot of guys that have had drug abuse and come out, you know, just some of them that unfortunately, and God rest their souls, aren't with us today, never could let go of the roar of the crowd or identifying themselves as a WWE or WWF superstar. And so when it's gone, because it won't last forever, man, who are you then?
Right.
You know, and we all go through, like I went through an identity crisis when I came out. What the heck do I do?
I went through the same thing. That roar of the crowd, man, and being under those lights, like Harley Race said it in his Hall of Fame speech, there's no better place to be. But yeah. once that's gone and you don't have it anymore and you're on the outside looking in, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. So that's why you want me to cheer for you every time you walk into a room? I get it now. Okay.
Oh, that's good.
Let me ask you this. Man. There's a picture floating around from the movie where you and your dad were sitting in the AC Arena in sight of WrestleMania 4. What feelings did you have sitting in such a historic place, knowing that almost 30 years prior, your father walked down the aisle as one of the biggest stars in the business?
Man, I went there, and I've been in arenas, and I've wrestled on the grandest stage of them all, you know, WrestleMania 26. But that moment was so cool. I think there's a shot in the film where I'm just sitting up in the stands, you know, because I wanted to go up there and just look at it from like a fan's perspective. And when I'm sitting up there, it took me back to the living room in my childhood house, you know, watching my dad on TV, beaming with absolute pride that, you know, all my friends around, like, oh my God, your dad's wrestling, you know, the Macho Man. And it's just like, I went back to being a little kid, man. Just in awe of my dad. And it was surreal. I'll be honest with you. It was surreal. It's a moment I'll never forget. And, you know, I just remembered that, wow, this is my hero. And he's been through a lot. He's made enormous sacrifices in his life that, you know, a lot of people that see us on TV don't realize all the sacrifices that we make. And it's tough. It's tough on you. It's even tougher on your family when you're gone 300 days out of the year, you know? So I just was so proud of him, you know, and it was a really special moment we got to share.
Now we're roughly around the same age, Ted. I think you're a couple years older, but being from a wrestling family, you obviously knew what your dad did for a living, but even as a young kid, were you able to comprehend the level of superstar or celebrity that your father was?
No, I had no idea, man. When I realized that he was a really big deal, I was wrestling in Japan. I had just started. I think I had like 6 matches, and Harley sent me over to Japan and with Pro Wrestling Noah. And like at 3 a.m. in the morning, I would get knocks on the doors, and there would be 5 fans out there with like little gifts, and they're like, And they were so disappointed because they thought Ted DiBiase was here. Like, holy God, what is going on here? Once I got on the road, and you know, obviously hearing stories from Harley, and just not just stories, but the admiration and the respect that my dad has garnished over the years from everyone, you know, he just can't negate the talent that he had and the contribution that he gave to the industry, to the company. And I look at videos now, like on YouTube, and I see him bouncing all over the ring and over the top rope, and you know, I'm like, wow. It's a new respect. Every day I admire my dad more and more, and what he's doing now is incredible, and he's using his platform for the right reasons. So it just makes him that much more of a hero of mine, you know.
Now watching the trailer, this question makes me laugh. Now watching the trailer, there was a brief clip of yourself, your dad, and your brother Brett in the backyard, and Brett's all fired up. And I remember this temper from 10 years ago. So it's nice to see that some things don't change. I love your brother Brett. But did it take you back to see Brett so upset, or did he always have these feelings that maybe that you do or don't know, and he never let them out?
Yeah, You know, Brett was learning some of this stuff too, and again, we literally had very organic conversations that, you know, just had not been discussed. And so, I just told Brett, I was like, man, don't hold anything back, you know? But we obviously love our dad and knew things that had happened and gone on. And, you know, my dad was not it's in the film. My dad was not addicted to drugs or alcohol. It was women was his thing. So, yeah, it's just, it's hard to talk about, you know, with your father or your mother. And so Brett, yeah, he's a hothead, Keenan. Nothing's changed. He's still a hothead. You're going to know what he's thinking about, you know, and he's going to tell you. You're not going to be able to get a word in, and he's going to speak over everyone.
Everybody.
but as passionate as he will come down on you, you know, he's a good man and a loving husband. He's doing really well, too. But, yeah, it was that was legit and uncomfortable. I was just like, oh, God, I'm going to have to throw him in this lake.
The Price of Fame is a story about redemption, too. After all this time, through your eyes, has the million-dollar man found what he's looking for?
Yes, 100%, and more, and then some. You know, my mom and my dad have never been better. My dad has real purpose in his life, and he'll tell you himself it's by the grace of God and his faith in Jesus Christ. And, you know, and he's found just being a grandfather, man, you guys ought to see the million-dollar man. It's crazy seeing, you know, we think of the million-dollar man as the character. And then you picture him as, you know, like bouncing this kid on his leg instead of like kicking the ball out of a kid bouncing the basketball. I remember when he kicked the ball away.
I do remember that. That was Rob Van Dam, if I remember correctly.
No, that was a little kid. He actually ran into this kid, and Rob Van Dam, that's what he's all about. You know, and then we're working together in Heart of David Ministry, and we're working with the state in Mississippi, partnered with them, doing some really cool stuff, unifying church leaders, community leaders, and, man, just serving the kids in the inner cities, the least likelies, and telling them you can dream as big as you want to, but you got to be willing to make the sacrifices and go on the journey as well. And we did it. And so sharing our experiences, mentoring, and doing some leadership training has become our passion and our purpose. And he and I are really tag teaming. So we're getting to tag team together, just not in the wrestling ring. It's a different arena.
The Price of Fame hits select theaters nationwide Tuesday, November 7th. Of course, we are talking to Ted DiBiase Jr., producer of Price of Fame and former WWE superstar. Be sure to follow Ted over on Twitter at Ted DiBiase.
Let's stick with your dad for just one last second here. Your dad was clearly a larger-than-life personality. Was it always stuck in your mind that you wanted to join this business, or were you very much anti it growing up?
Man, I was. There was always that, you know, that bug inside me that was like, oh my God, that had to be so much fun. And just the curiosity alone was strong enough to want me to, you know, that never left. And there were times in my life where I wanted it more. But my dad did a pretty good job of letting me know that I would never wrestle, you know, all of my life until I got to college. And, I'm the first and only person in my family to actually graduate from college, which I'm very proud of. And a lot of people don't know that I have dyslexia. So it was pretty tough for me. So that was kind of one of the first battles I overcame. And then, that was, after that, I was like, look, I've done everything that you've asked me to do. You know, I got my education. I want to do this. I want to give it a shot. And so, He finally gave me his blessing. You know, when he got hired back, Keenan, you remember when he came up like as a producer and he was working.
That was right around 2005, right? That's when I first came in for my tryouts. I had my string of tryouts in the summer of 2005, and I believe he was just starting right around that time as well.
Yeah, yeah, it was a short stint. I think he was there for like a year, but it was long enough and at the perfect time, right at the end of my college experience, you know, that it opened the window. And he said, okay, you've done everything I've asked. Give it a shot, but you're going to Harley and you're starting there. So I started at WLW with Harley Race and what I nicknamed Heldon Misery.
Well, you take me directly into my next question. You signed with WWE in 2007, but you did start with Harley Race. You know, continue on. Take us through training a little bit with Harley there.
Yeah, man, that was, you know, that was, I look back and that's one of the fondest memories I have. It was one of the hardest experiences of my life because I was working four jobs chasing this dream. You know, I'd wake up every morning at 3:57 a.m., cut 18 fairways, and I'd leave there and stock produce at the Hy-Vee grocery store, and I'd go train with Harley and for 3 hours and then work out for an hour. I'd sweat and mop the gym floor for free membership. And I remember folding underwear and T-shirts at the Polo Factory Outlet Mall down by the lake, you know, trying to pay for training and you know, just live. This was like the first time I'd been away. I went to college at MC in Clinton, Mississippi, in the town I grew up. So I'd been a homeboy body and a mama's boy, you know, and so just trying to make it. And, but that was an incredible experience, you know, that I got to do some independent stuff before I ever went to a developmental deal, which I was offered. A lot of people don't know. I was offered a developmental deal first. But my dad encouraged, he said, it's your choice. I'd encourage you to go spend some time with Harley, learn the basics there. And there was something special about Harley, you know, was in the ring the night that my grandfather had a heart attack, Iron Mike, and passed away. And then he really gave my dad a shot, gave him his first hour-long Broadway and put my dad on the map. And so he had something to do with all three generations. And, you know, spent a year there. He got me in, over to Japan. I did a great job in Japan. Did a five-week tour. And then they called me the day I got home, and they asked me to come back the next week. They were actually going to sign me to a year-long deal. And I think WWE got wind and said, no, why don't you come on down here now? So I spent a year there.
And this is Pro Wrestling Noah in Japan, Ted?
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. So great experience.
Take us through the process of signing with WWE. What was that like?
Man, it was surreal when I got the contract, you know. I was thankful that I'd gone to college because it was like, you know, I knew to read the details. And
I did the same thing. I went right to the last page and signed it. It didn't matter what was in there.
Man, I read it. And, you know, right before the last page, it says, what IP would you like? You know, and
this is
so,
the page that gets everybody.
Not Ted DiBiase Jr. And if you can take a look, I was the last wrestler to ever keep their name and wrestle with their name.
Interesting.
I was the very last one because I said I want Ted DiBiase Jr., Ted DiBiase, Theodore Marvin DiBiase Jr., Theodore Marvin, Theodore DiBiase. Like I put all of
every
them
variation possible.
Hopefully Vince would respect that. You know, I'm a businessman. I'm an entrepreneur, and you know,
well,
I've got three businesses now. So
we saw how good that worked out with Curtis Axel in the beginning. Well, I got to FCW, Ted, in November of 2007. You were already there. I was coming in from OVW, and FCW was still at its very, very bare bones earliest stages. We talked a little bit about it earlier. What were some of your earliest memories down there in Florida?
Man, I just remember that I was so excited they were paying me to train and I didn't have to work like four jobs, and which probably wasn't a good thing, you know.
Well, yeah,
because we certainly got in some trouble down there.
We all did.
You know, we all did. But who's not going to? I mean, we're like 24, 25.
You were 24. I was 20. I was 21. I celebrated 21 in Louisville and then came to Tampa. Yeah. We were all of age, just making sure Tampa knew who we were.
Gosh, man. I just remember, working hard and playing hard.
Yeah.
You know? we did, man. And we worked hard, and, we put blood, literally blood, sweat, and tears, and into every day. And then, and man, we while we all desperately were waiting for that call, you know, we would hang. It was so much fun. It was like a fraternity.
It really was.
Just a cool experience. We're all family, and you know, we're all wanting the call, but really excited when one of our buddies got called up, and it was just an incredible camaraderie, you know. And I cherish that time.
I remember. Go ahead.
I'm a different person from that time today. Yeah. Thank God, by the grace of God. But man, I cherish those days. Man, it was good.
You talk about us being family, being fraternity. I can remember what was the knockoff Hooters down there? Wingstop? Was that what
Wingstop.
It was? Wingstop.
Yeah.
We would all get together, and we knew Kofi was going for the Intercontinental title. We didn't know what was happening, but we all figured, you know, yeah. Kofi's finally up. We're going to go watch him on pay-per-view, and the kid wins the IC title. We all go nuts in this one section of the restaurant, and everyone else looks at us like we're nuts. But we're looking like we won the Super Bowl because that's one of our guys.
Yeah, it was one of the fam, you know. It was one of our boys, and I remember that. It was so special, man. It was really cool. I remember living in an apartment with, first I adopted Seamus, you know. Seamus and I lived in a one-bedroom apartment. Then came along Yamamoto.
Yoshi.
Yoshitachi. And, you know, he just shows up at, you remember, he just showed up.
He just showed up. You remember that? Well, if I remember correctly, New Japan was supposed to pay somebody to take care of him, and that somebody didn't do what they were supposed to do, and
that's right.
it fell on your lap by chance.
Well, yeah, I was driving down the road after we had eaten after a practice. We went to what's the sushi place?
The All You Can Eat $10. It was on Dale Mabry Road. I forget, but yeah, I can picture it. I know
place. Exactly
how to get there.
Me and Seamus were on the way back. This is the strangest ride ever. We're on the way back, you know, and Seamus was just, like, new to America, and I guess new to, like, sushi. because he's, like, stuffing his face, you know, and he's feeling sick. And I'm driving down Dale Mabry, and I see Yoshi sitting on the front steps. No cars in the parking lot. He's just sitting there. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Seamus is like, I think I'm going to be sick, fella. And, you know, I, like, pull in there. I'm like, hey, dude, are you got a ride? You good? He goes, no, Steve Madison. And, you know, I'm like, what? He's like, I said, do you speak English? He's like, Zito. I'm like, do you have a place to stay? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, oh, my God, get in the car.
Get in the car.
And, bro, he came home with me as like a lost dog.
And he never left.
So I moved. I got us a two-bedroom apartment. Seamus had a room. I gave Yoshi my bed. I slept on the couch. Three guys. One American, one Irishman, one Japanese guy, all in the same apartment. And you can bet that was interesting, to say the least.
What a reality show. You guys would have blown the Kardashians off the air.
Oh, my gosh. It was crazy.
Let's jump back into wrestling here real quick. Legacy. It was one of my favorite parts of your WWE stint. Take me through the creative of putting Legacy together. The built-in story is there, obviously. But for me, it just sounds like something Randy would pull the trigger on. Am I right in that?
Man, if you know anything, you know more than me of how it was created. You know, that was probably Michael Hayes' idea. Luckily, Randy wanted to do it, you know, because it was incredibly successful and definitely the highlight of my career. That was just a ton of fun. We had an incredible run. You know, it was kind of like, I guess the Shield is had similar experience, you know, and done really well. We didn't have the ability to break out like those guys have, or it just didn't happen. You know, I won't say we didn't have the ability. It just didn't happen. But, you know, it was fun, man. And, had a really good run. That WrestleMania was really cool, an experience. That was my childhood dream, wrestling there, you know? And, I don't know, Wrestling DX, and just thought I can remember doing a European tour where it was DX, and one night it would be The Undertaker, the third man, and then the next night it would be John Cena. And main eventing just every night, the crowds were insane, and, you know, Sean would pull our pants down every night. It was just a lot of laughs, a lot of fun. But it was good, man. It was a good run. I wish more would have come out of it.
Well, you just spoke about it. What was it like for you to finally walk down that WrestleMania aisle, knowing that your father had done it so many times before?
Man, it was, I don't know how to put that into words adequately. I tell kids all the time that in that moment, you know, I almost cried, and, I was trying to hold back the tears and stay in character. But honestly, I was thinking about the kid that was cutting 18 fairways and stocking produce at the Javi grocery store in Eldon, Missouri, and just wanting it to happen so bad, you know, and never giving up and working through broken bones and, you know, thinking about all the people that told me I wasn't like my father, I'd never be, you know, I'd never make it like he did, that wasn't me. Everybody that tells you what you are, what you're not, and, you know, just it was satisfying. It wasn't fulfilling. It didn't fulfill my life, which I found out afterwards. But it was incredibly, it was one of the greatest moments of my life, you know, behind my getting married and my children, and, you know, now adding value to others' lives and using that moment as a teaching tool. I teach people to be growth conscious as opposed to goal conscious, which I was goal conscious. And that night I was like, okay, everything I've ever dreamed of just happened. What now? You know, my dream literally became a reality. The impossible literally just became possible. And what do I do now? And, you know, we probably don't have time for what happened after that and the years of identity crisis I went through, because I wasn't doing anything with it that was significant. I was just wanting more of that. And, it will never fully satisfy, but it was satisfying somewhat. So that's a long-winded answer, but it was surreal. 74,000 eyeballs on me and, I don't know, 10 million watching around the world, and I was the first guy out. And in that moment, all eyes were on me, and, you know, all that work was worth it.
You know, Ted, I tell people all the time that it doesn't matter how you look at it. You know, I may not have been Derek Jeter, you may not have been Babe Ruth, but we played for the Yankees.
That's right.
We were at at home plate. We played for the Yankees. We literally did what people told us. I was told my entire life, what would Vince McMahon ever want with you? And for whatever reason, it just happened to work out. And you know what? That's something that nobody will ever be able to take from me, you, or anybody else.
That's right, buddy.
So, you know,
that is right.
Wrapping this up in just a couple more questions. What are you doing these days? You touched on it a little bit. Walk us through the whole thing. What's Ted DiBiase doing day to day?
Man, I do two things every day. I do my best to add value to my life, and I do my best to add value to others' lives. You know, my titles, I guess, I'm the Vice President of Business Development for One Life America. It's in the insurance industry. Got a $50 million company, and we've got 3,000 agents nationwide that I speak into and do leadership training. I'm a certified leadership trainer and life coach now. I'm an ambassador and sit on the board of Heart of David Ministries. My father started, and we've got a bunch of programs that I've helped put together that serve kids. We do service projects in the communities. And right now, I think Mississippi's first and all the worst, but when we get done, we'll be the greatest state in the country. I just got invited to the White House as a
very nice,
you know, millennial influencer. You know, and so, and that's an honor to be a part of. My goal is to be a part of the solution. So, attracting the right people in life by doing the right thing, just doing the right thing and doing as much as I can to help others. You know, in wrestling, we focused on ourselves, our own bodies all the time. now I spend my life focusing on God, family, and other people, and how I can best serve them. And it seems to work out pretty good, man. And it's a good life, and I'm blessed.
Any regrets?
None.
I got to ask you one thing before we get you out of here. So it's the last one from me. But I ask everybody this who comes on who's friends with Mr. Kevin Keenan here.
Here we go.
What kind of dirt can you give me that I can use around the office here on him? Maybe PG-13 dirt. How about that?
Well, Ted, I didn't tell them who I was when I got here.
Yeah, he kept that a secret, by the way.
Like, they found out on their own. Like, I was trying to do this whole thing, like, on my own and, you know, be that independent guy, and they stumbled upon all my wrestling stuff.
Oh, man. You know what? You're going to have to find somebody else, because all I can tell you is he's one of the most loyal dudes. He's just a fierce companion. He's an encourager and motivator. Man, he's just a good you're lucky to have him. I'll tell you that. So
we're starting to learn that here. He's not yeah. fully yet, but no, we are lucky to have him here, man. I appreciate you doing this for us for sure.
All right, Ted, one last question for me, and I appreciate the kind words, and Turtle, you do that all the time. It's unbelievable to me. But from Ted Jr., how should the Million Dollar Man be remembered, Ted?
One of the most selfless men I've ever met. A man that's just full of love, and a man that was willing to give up his dreams for his family. Man of integrity, man of character, a man after God's own heart.
Well, I'm going to tell you a quick story here, Ted. So in 2006, when I walked into Louisville, Kentucky in OVW, the first person, and I remember this vividly, he was sitting in one of the corner turnbuckles in the ring, and the first person I met when I walked in was Cody Rhodes. And he said, "Hey, man, I'm Cody. Nice to meet you." I said, "Hey, man, I'm Kevin Keenan, new referee." He goes, "Come on, let me show you around." Cody went around and made sure I knew who everybody was, where I needed to be, took me out to lunch the next day because I was the new guy. Turtle, do you know who the first person I met was when I walked into FCW?
Ted.
Ted DiBiase Jr. And you want to know what Ted DiBiase Jr. did for me the minute I walked into FCW?
The exact same thing?
The exact same thing. Two-thirds of the legacy. That's Cody cool. Rhodes and Ted DiBiase.
So now I owe you lunch is what you're telling me.
You owe me lunch. You owe me lunch.
Fair enough.
But they did the same thing for me, and they are two of my favorite people in the world. Ted, I appreciate everything you've done for me over the years. And when we started talking about this a couple weeks ago and we had that half an hour phone call, I immediately regret it not keeping in touch over the years. So what do we say we don't make this another 10 years before we talk again?
Hey, man, bro. Yeah, definitely not, man. We'll have to get together soon. We'll have to do one of these again in person, you know.
I would love that. Let's figure something out. I get down south. You come up here. We'll figure it out, and, you know, we'll meet in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Keenan, for reaching out, buddy. And Turtle, appreciate it, man.
Thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Ted. Best of luck with the movie.
Thanks, guys.
The name of the movie is Price of Fame. Don't forget themoviescreener.com and thepriceoffame.com for tickets. Turtle, take Ted DiBiase Sr., the Million Dollar Man, out of the equation. He has a fantastic story. If you're a wrestling fan, you know his story. We're going to learn even more about him in the film The Price of Fame, but Ted Jr.'s story is just fantastic.
It really is. I feel like he kind of got a raw deal with the WWE. Hopefully, maybe one day he'll come back and kind of redo his fate there. But I loved hearing his story. He could talk to me for hours, and I would enjoy it.
I don't know that you'll necessarily get him back. To me, it sounds like he's moved on.
That's what it sounds like. But it'd be cool to see a one-time-only return or something.
As you've heard in our conversation.
Maybe a legacy reunion when Cody comes back one day.
That would be cool. Ted had it all, man. He really was. He should be a top guy right now. He had the look. He was a star. He dressed like a star. He acted like a star. He walked like a star. When the bell rang, he could go. He could talk. I mean, he really had it all. And it's one of the big mistakes, I believe, that WWE made. They really missed the boat on Ted Jr.
The mic would be on. It'd be helpful.
Yeah, if you turn your mic on.
They seem to do that a lot with some of the generational superstars. I don't know why.
Yeah, we talked about it briefly. You know, when Ted was talking about his intellectual property, about he wanted all the names, and
absolutely,
I referenced Curtis Axel, Joe Henning. Do you remember what his first name was in the WWE?
No.
They didn't even reference his family at all.
Interesting.
You don't remember his name?
No, I really don't.
Michael McGillicuddy.
Weird.
That was Joe Henning, Curtis Axel's first, the son of Mr. Perfect.
That's weird.
Our thanks again to Ted DiBiase Jr. Please don't
forget. But I did learn something real quick.
What's
that? Before you go back in the movie plug, and I'm going to get that out. I've learned something.
What's that?
I just redid my WIP contract.
Oh, yeah?
I want Turtle. I want Eric Golden. I want all the things IP-wise. So Mr. DiBiase put that in there correct. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure Spike and the powers that be will really adhere to what you have to say.
I'm Mr. Perfect.
Yeah, okay. No, don't forget, not. The name of the movie is The Price of Fame, Tuesday, November 7th, one night only, select theaters nationwide. TheMovieScreener.com, ThePriceOfFame.com for tickets. Turtle, we have a great guest on next week, and I don't know.
Wait, should we tell them now, or should we make them wait for it?
No, I'm going to tell them now, because I don't know that he's done any media since he left the WWE. It's very possible. I'll have to research this. It's very possible that we might be the first interview.
I can't wait. I'm
former
excited.
Impact Wrestling superstar. Former Ring of Honor Wrestling superstar. Former WWE superstar. Right here in Wrestler Court next week. The greatest man that ever lived. His words, not mine. A double Austin Aries is joining us.
I'm thrilled. When you told me we locked him down for next week, I almost jumped out of my window.
We're going to get into a lot of wrestling talk with Aries. He has a new book.
I'm really interested to learn about his vegan lifestyle. I need to drop a few LBs, so maybe I'll go vegan.
He's certainly going to tell you how to do it. But do us a favor, follow us on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
At Eric S. Golden.
You can follow me on Twitter, at Real Kev Keenan. The show account, of course, at Wrestler Court, all on Twitter. You can find us on CBSPhilly.com, as well as iTunes and the Radio.com app. Until next week. This has been Wrestler Court with Keenan and Turtle, powered by Sports Radio 94, WIP.